Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the fifth podcast of the 2025 Champ Off-Road season. This is the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. We have a special guest once again on our show. She's been around all the United States covering motocross, snowmobile racing, dirt track racing, and also coming back to Anago, Wisconsin here in a few weeks. I want to welcome Haley Shanley. How's it going, Haley?
It's going really well. Better now that I'm talking to you two. It's been too long, so thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, I will say, even though Nolan filled in like super admirably, A-plus job to Nolan, and I'm sure you agree with the bits and pieces that you were able to watch on Sunday from Wheatland, but it felt like there was someone missing from the team. It just, the vibes were a little off.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. For what it's worth, it was a great show. Nolan crushed it, as I fully expected him to, and you guys as well. The racing delivered. I mean, are you kidding me? And like I said, it was a lot of fun to watch the broadcast. I had to miss the live show. I got to watch the highlights from Saturday, but the live show on Sunday, I think I pretty much caught all but the first two races, maybe. So it was a fun day. If I have to watch Champ from afar, I'm gonna do that. I'd prefer to watch it in person, though.
Were you like, did you have like hives? Like you were bummed out you couldn't be there and it was bothering you that the show was going on without you?
Totally. And it's not that I didn't want to be in Denver for Supercross. It's just that like in my mind, I wanted to be two places at once. It kills me not to be there. And this was my first ever Champ race that I've missed. And I mean, I've been doing this with this team since Champ started in 2020. So that's a healthy track record of years to have not missed an off-road race. So yeah, that was it was weird to be away, but once I got to sit down and actually watch the live stream, I'm like, okay, this is I feel like I'm at least I'm getting a sense of the rush and the adrenaline from just watching the broadcast. So but yeah, definitely like just the flow of the week. Like I know what my Sunday through Thursday looks like on an off-road race week, and just to not be doing a lot of the things that I would be ahead of a Champ race, it didn't feel right. And especially Friday, you know, I'd be on the grounds watching qualifying with you guys, combing the pits and maybe shooting some interviews and stuff. So it was weird leading up to the event, especially.
Yeah, it was crazy not having you around, like Shane said as well. And you must be having a blast, though. You get to travel the country and you get to do your favorite sport as well. I mean, bouncing back and forth, are you going to run into any other schedule differences throughout this season with Champ?
Nope. I will be there for the rest of the Champ races. I'm excited to be back in the saddle for the rest of them. And then this summer, I will be doing a bunch of pro motocross races. I just got done with Fox Raceway this past weekend for the pro moto opener. I'll be at Hangtown this weekend, and then I'll just be in and out throughout the season. Of course, I have my Champ obligations, and then as soon as we wrap up playoffs, actually, for Super Motocross, it works out perfectly that Glen Helen is the next weekend. So bookending my three playoff races for Super Motocross, I've got Crandon on the front end and Glen Helen on the back end. So it'll be a really busy summer. I think if I mapped it out correctly, after last weekend, that was my first weekend off since before Anaheim 1, first week of January, I get two more weekends off this summer. So it's busy. This is definitely the busiest summer I will have ever mapped out, but I wouldn't trade it. This is what I've wanted to do. This is always where I've wanted to be. So I'm just very thankful to get to do them both.
And this was your second year, correct, of doing Supercross?
This is my third year.
Time flies.
Yes, it does. Yeah. 2023 was my first season with them. And then the last 2 years, I've only done Supercross and then the Super Motocross playoffs. But this year had added some Pro Motocross into the mix, which is rad. So it's nice to be like, it's the same team. Like effectively, it's the same big broadcast team. We shuffle some people around, but just to be in the rotation and fill some of that time between the end of Supercross and playoffs, it's good. Because I mean, you guys know what it's like taking time away from races, even after an extended break between race weekends. Even if you don't miss a race, it's still, you might even feel like you're just out of the loop or you're missing something. So it's nice to cut down on the time off between the two seasons.
I think your schedule is insane.
Yeah.
No, I mean, just maybe it says more about me than about you, but how much I pour into the off-road season. Like by the end of that, Brent and I are done. Like we don't talk to each other for a few weeks.
That, yeah, it's, you know, I can say the same. Like when I was solely focused for many years on just Champ in the summer, I would maybe do a few other events here and there with sprint cars or, you know, other events or entities throughout the summer. But it was still a lot because it's not just the hours that you are spending on air. That's just the part that people see. It's the production meetings. It's all the time studying. It's debriefing after the last race. All the while you're trying to manage your sleep and your diet so that your brain is functional on that race weekend. And a lot of us, we have gigs during the week, like our 9-to-5 jobs, other careers or other gigs. So it's just trying to balance all these things and stay super organized so that you can just be performing at the top of your game. So it takes a lot of organization. And that was a really big shock to my system in 2023. Just going from that year, I was committed to Snowcross before I had taken on or accepted the contract from Supercross. So then, even though there were two off weekends in the Supercross schedule, they weren't to me because I was doing Snowcross and Supercross that season. So it was literally, I'd have to count it up. I want to say it was at least 17 to 20 weekends on the road. So that was a lot. It definitely wears on you mentally and physically. And as well, your relationships, like you got to take care of home life. I will admit that I feel like my time that I get to go see my family, like that has suffered. I try to get home as much as I can, but just making time for your loved ones. We're all chasing a dream here in motorsports, but you can't forget what's at the core and what's most important. So just trying to figure out how to physically, mentally, emotionally manage a schedule like that has been a big learning curve for me over the years. And I think that I'm finally getting to a good place with it to where it's manageable.
I know exactly what you mean about struggling to find time for family and the people in your life. Especially in the Champ season, there's kind of that dog days stretch from ERX through Bark River where it's three races across 5 weekends. I think
yeah, same. That is my mom and stepdad. I've been fortunate that they've been able to come to a couple of races this year for Supercross. But otherwise, we don't, like, we're sending messages and memes all week long, but we're not talking on the phone. So yeah, they probably hear my voice more on the broadcast. And that's a bummer to me when I sit back and I recognize that, because, you know, your loved ones at the end of the day, that you're not going to have them forever. And so it's like, I just need to sometimes just take a deep breath and center and just remember what's most important here. So it's, it's sometimes, like you said, Shane, just getting through those stretches can be a lot.
Yeah. And time, like you said, just goes by so fast, like Shane was saying. And I can remember when I first met you back, 6-7 years ago, and we were at Bark River, I believe, and you were just taking notes. And now to see you succeed and go on to bigger and better things, I know it makes Shane proud, but it makes me proud as well to see you go to that next step. And we're so happy for you. And it's so fun to watch because your passion, your studying skills and everything is just over the top. And it's cool to see you with the big names in the sport and your name's right with them.
Oh, well, thank you, Brent. That means a lot to me. I think it's I'm always studying. I'm always a student of the sport, as some of my teammates like to say. And I know you guys are as well. And no one would be doing what the four of us, including Nolan, are doing if we didn't love this. Like, how else are you going to pull those late night study sessions? And how else are you going to, just even when you don't feel like socializing, bring yourself to the pits to try and force conversation on people when you're just maybe not even feeling it that day? So it's we do it because we love it. And that definitely is the motivating factor.
I remember having a conversation with Brent in our rental car during the Wheatland weekend. And I, over the past few months leading up to this year, I've kind of had the realization that all the work, like you said, there's a ton of work that we do that isn't with a microphone in our face. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that I put into it to prepare myself as well as I can be prepared. But I've also realized that I love the work. Like, I like that part of it too, which is a strange thing for people that have known me my whole life to hear me say that. But the minutiae of it, I find that I even enjoy that part, the boring stuff, the going over 20 pages of notes, preparing numbers upon numbers. I like that part of it too. So I've found that I love the work, and it makes it a lot easier.
Totally. I can relate to that on many different levels. And I even take it back to high school when I got my first experience in shooting, editing, storytelling for a broadcast journalism class in school I was taking. It was like, I always, you know, I put my best foot forward. I'm trying. I'm an okay student. But when I discovered that I discovered a field of study, being broadcast and journalism, that I could tie to my passion of motorsports and being a huge fan, things clicked for me. I started to work and dig deeper on just another level. And like, I feel like that same thing applies today. Like you talk about the studying, the notes, like I love a good spreadsheet. I love like just, you know, Excel docs. And that's where like I'll have my stat database and where I'll, I haven't used it as much the last couple of years for Champ, but I was developing a really good system there. But I have with Snowcross, and at Supercross, we have statisticians that help us out with that. But there's just something about like getting locked in and usually having a caffeinated beverage with you to help you do that. But sometimes I'll just get so locked in and honestly lose track of time. Like before I know it, I will have spent hours sitting at my laptop just studying, tracking down notes, trying to formulate storylines, looking at stats, all those things. So it's about enjoying the process as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the process is so fun, like Shane said, because, you know, as you're learning all this new info, it's creating you to be a better person for the outside world as well as different sports. And that's what's cool to see you generate and going to Supercross and Motocross, because the excitement and then the role, the prep, I mean, do you find yourself in the same scenarios as you did with Champ, or do they run things a lot different there?
Yes and no. I think generally, as far as the tools of the trade, like how the fundamentals of, you know, what is a good interview? What does that look like? What does good performance look like? A lot of the objectives that I have on a Champ broadcast are effectively the same on a Supercross or Motocross broadcast. Is the only big difference is it's a matter of what that producer, director, or network wants out of you specifically, because each producer, director, and network have a different flavor, different, you know, objectives, how they want you to perform. But as far as the job itself, it's all very similar. Like I have the opportunity to broadcast multiple sports, and while they're maybe vastly different in nature, these motorsports, it's to me as a reporter, I'm having a conversation with a racer, and having to have a conversation right with a racer is kind of a universal thing. But as far as the prep work for it, back to your original question, it looks a little bit different. I have always come up through, you know, of course, snowcross, off-road, dirt track racing, comparatively to major league sports. And I do consider Supercross, Motocross under major league sports, even if they aren't maybe quite at the level of the NBA, NFL, but still pretty major league. There are a lot more resources that come with that. So we have a great team of statisticians who are prepping us during the week. They are at our disposal. Anytime we have a question, we just hit them up and ding, they get right back to us. And they even have like a live message feed that comes at us during the broadcast. So if we have internet, which we usually do, especially in stadiums, we're just pulling that up on our phones, and it allows us to kind of check our work as we go to make sure we're all on the same page with the factual information, specifically the numbers. So we have a team helping us during the week, but we don't rely on that because that's just one element to it. The other element is just, you know, the human interest side, studying, okay, this person has achieved this. What's this mean with the context of their last 9 months and everything they've gone through, or how does this compare to what they've achieved so far in their career? Is it a career best? So it's, you know, the numbers, that is a huge part of it, but understanding the context of it, the history, that's the whole other side. So I would say that having resources like the stat team, but also having just a bigger production team in general. You know, when we're at Champ, for example, we're also working with our content team. So I am not just hosting content on camera. I'm actually writing those segments, planning them out, sometimes editing them. And that is a lot. and I say that, like, not like I'm needing a pat on the back, but I just want the viewers to realize that it champ, like, there are so many people on the team that are wearing multiple hats and busting their butts. And that is because we aren't a multi-million, billion-dollar organization that can afford 30 people to do that job. So there are things that I do at Champ that I don't have to do at Supercross and Motocross, and not because I don't want to, but because they want me focused on my job, and that's performing as a commentator.
So you can actually sleep at night then on your race weekend?
Yeah, and that is a huge thing that is I've learned, and my coach is it. You know, I tried to apply it as best as I could my first year with them, with Supercross, and my coach's name is Tony. He's just like, you know what, you need to be hydrating, sleeping, taking your vitamins, like nutritionally, you need to be sound because this all affects your brain and ability to perform. And so that first year though, I was just always stressing the night before. I feel like I would just need to be up so late, just reading everything that I could, going over all my materials. And he's just like, no more, none of that. Like, shut it down at 9 or 10 at night. Shut it down when you get tired and just go to sleep. Right. Because you being able to perform on a full battery is going to do so much more for you than stats that, honestly, everyone else on the team and a lot of our viewers have access to. So, yes, trying to not just getting sleep, but prioritizing sleep has been a big thing that I've been trying to work into my program. And even at the Champ Races list last year, my teammates have told me that my mood is better. I am like... I'm less stressed.
Well, you're getting better. No.
I am always a student of the craft, student of the sport, but it really has made a big difference in just my stress levels on race weekend. Because like I said, and you guys know it too, we're all wearing a lot of hats.
I think we need to find our own Tony, Brent. We need to find someone to tell us to go to sleep.
Yeah.
You're talking about having like a team of statisticians, like when it comes to at least the duo of Brent and me in the booth, like I'm the statistician.
Yep.
So I go back to the hotel and then I'm updating the stats. So,
and then try to remember back in the hotel, we ask each other 100,000 questions and everyone thinks that we probably just go and do our own thing. We stay up till midnight, 1 o'clock talking about the next day. So it's hard to get away once you're in it.
1,000%. And that's one thing that I really wish the audience knew more of. And we can't, we can't exactly go out and just say that outright on a broadcast without patting our own back. But I wish that's something our audience knew more of that you guys do, is like, you guys are the material hub for our broadcast. Like, you guys are sourcing all of this historic material, the stats, all those good things. And that's one thing that I truly believe for commentators, like looking to make a career out of this and work their way up. Like, as you climb the ranks of, you know, in the ranks, and I mean, in terms of how big a series is, like up into like major league sports, but starting at like the grassroots level, I truly believe that people who work in the media in grassroots racing have such a competitive edge because we're so used to doing all of that stuff ourselves. It's not like the job gets easier as you climb higher, but you do have more people to help you out and support you as you murk your way up. So that is one thing that I've always had so much respect for from you guys, and you guys have helped me out so much over the years. It's that is such an underrated skill that I just wish more people knew about that you guys provide.
Not only is there a necessity though for us to do it ourselves, I think a trait that I've inherited from my dad for sure is that if you want something done right, just do it yourself. I would find it really hard to trust somebody else to inform my storylines, I guess.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you guys are the ones calling it in the booth. You know relatively what to expect. If anyone's going to make a prediction about an upcoming race, you guys are the most informed ones to do it. So you know what you're looking for in terms of stats and history to support your commentating. So I completely agree with you there. And we all have our own way and our own method and speed of sourcing our own information. So sometimes I find myself doing the same thing. It's easier for me just to do it in my process than to bother other people. And if I need, like, when I need to fact check things, like, absolutely. Or in my case, as a reporter, I'm often going to the racer themselves to confirm things before I broadcast that out there. So I completely relate to that of just trying to do the heavy lifting on your own.
And there's always people that will let us know if we're not doing our job right.
That's never happened before.
Only two, right? Two times.
No. Yeah. No, accountability, it's a good thing. We all need that. And it makes us better.
How often do you have to deal with like unsolicited critiques from the peanut gallery?
I would say it depends on what it's about. If it's about my material, I don't want to say I always get it right because I don't. But I do pride myself on putting my absolute best foot forward. I religiously triple check. If I have breaking news, I have an obligation, an ethical obligation, to be precise and get that right. When it comes to anything numbers related, like same thing, I'm just quadruple checking the heck out of it. So when it comes to factual information, I don't really get that much heat on it. We aren't just hired to talk about what's happening. We are also paid for our opinions, especially guys like you. Like you guys are... I don't know if you have a definitive like host and play-by-play duties. You guys are kind of like, I liken it to Justin Brayton and Adam Ciancerullo and the Race Day Live booth. Like these are both hosts and they're both analysts. And I feel like you guys are kind of that same role too. So we're in a position where we are giving our opinions and people may not like our opinions. So sometimes I may get some pushback on that, but the vast majority of people who got something to say, it's about my appearance, or it's just, I don't like the sound of her voice, or I don't like this. And it's like, okay, thanks for stating that in terms of absolutes. Like it's a fact that I have a bad voice, or it's a fact that I am not like appealing to listen to or appealing to look at. Thanks, buddy.
Who are these sick people?
It's you know what? It's always people of the internet, and oftentimes with like a Bible verse or a cross emoji in their bio. It's always what I'm generally speaking about is hypocrisy. If someone who's just going to say something that's, they don't mean it to be constructive. They mean it to be hurtful and get a reaction out of you. And it's just always so funny. If you do have time in your day to go click on their profile, it's always just amazing what you might find.
It's so hard. Like, I mean, we've dealt with it so many times. I can catch myself texting Shane or vice versa. He'll text me and be like, man, did you see so-and-so and who backed him up and who liked the comment? And it's like, it's not that we really care that they find things wrong with what we do, but at the same time, it's like, man, we would hand them our headset and be like, hey, we'll go watch and you guys can come and do our gig. And I promise, when that little red light came on, they'd probably walk right back to the grandstands. So it's like, I think they just get a kick out of tearing somebody else down, just like normal bullying or anything, right?
Yeah. And I'll admit, like, I'm guilty of, like, when I watch sports, like, I don't watch a lot of sports. Like, I like watching the NHL. It's a big one I'm a fan of. But I don't really watch much football or basketball. But if it's on, I am watching for the commentators. And I probably watch it with more of a critical eye because this is the field that we work in. But I mean, not unnecessarily critical. But even still, I'm guilty of having opinions of, ooh, I don't like how they worded that. Or I don't feel that that came across as they intended or that sort of thing. But it's just the comments of, and again, I use the term speaking in absolutes because people, a lot of times when they're just giving unsolicited feedback, particularly on the internet, it's always just, you know, all up in arms. It's life or death. It's, or they have to make a joke out of it. And it's like, you know what, that's fine. We work in the public eye. We are not immune to criticism, but it's my mom always told me, consider the source. Us three, like, and Nolan, like, we know what constructive criticism is. We even know if it's not constructive. We know if there's something we can take from it. And most importantly, we have people in positions to tell us if we're doing a good job or not and help us to be better. This could be our producer, our director. This could be, you know, people who work in broadcast and other industries. Like, we know where really credible feedback comes from. And credible feedback can come from the fans, or drivers, or anyone, don't get me wrong. But it's, you know, from a comment, especially online, just by looking at it, if it's, you know, if it's just a hot-headed opinion, a hot take, or if it's, there's actually something good there.
I think the other side of it too is, I'll speak for Brent. Brent and I are our two biggest critics. Like, if you had time, we could tell you every mistake we made in Wheatland over the 2 days.
Same. I feel that very much.
Maybe that's kind of lost on the peanut gallery a little bit.
Oh, that, totally. Like,
hey, like, we're trying to be better too.
It hurts. It hurts.
Oh yeah. Some sting a little bit, but I mean, we sometimes know not to go looking for it, but at the same time, like,
I don't know about you guys,
but I know for myself, like, sometimes I do want to know what's going on. And I know that it's, even if it's directed at me, or even if they tag me in it, it's not personal. Like, these people are fans, and fans, we feel a lot of ownership in the sports that we're fans of, and that's awesome. So that will manifest itself in sometimes some, you know, highly critical comments. But I know that when it comes to my work in the professional sense, if there's something I have said, a take that I've had, that a racer or someone doesn't agree with, I will say that I have never had an issue. There's never been an issue with that racer or that crew member or family member coming to me and not feeling like they can't talk about it. Like, they can come to me and they can, you know, get it out of their system in person or online with a long message and let me know how it made them feel, or how it's wrong or what have you. And, you know, there are times when I'm straight up wrong and we have to eat crow. But there are other times too, where it's like, this is my opinion. Here's why. I can understand how it was maybe interpreted that way. However, I'm going to respectfully agree to disagree. And that's totally okay too. We all walk a line where we don't want to anyone off. We don't want to shed anyone in a negative light, because we want to grow the fan base to the sport. We don't want to make anyone look bad. But at the same time, we do have an obligation as media to call it as we see it and not to speculate. But we do have to sometimes say, oh, I wonder if this is happening, or I wonder if this is happening, because we're analyzing as we see it. And there's always opportunities to follow up and get concrete information later on. But like I said, there are things that I've said on broadcast occasionally that someone may not like. But more often than not, when it's someone in the industry, we end up having a really good discussion about it, whether we end up agreeing or agreeing to disagree on it. And I appreciate those conversations.
And it goes off of, like, battles on the track as well. And Shane can say this too. Like, some people maybe hit us up later on in the week after a weekend and go like, oh man, are you favoring CJ and Johnny? It sounds like you're really talking more about them than the other drivers. And it's like, people just don't grasp. We're not out there to root for our favorite driver. We're trying to bring the best show we possibly can for the viewers. And sometimes I feel like when you get criticized or get called out on something, it's like, we don't mean to do it in a certain way, but it just comes out. Like you said, we're calling it like we see it. And I think that's the best part about our job, is you really can't plan. It's like you're in a race car. It just happens.
Yeah, 1,000%. And off-road tracks, the majority of them, you cannot see every square foot of the surface. And what do we have to do? We have to watch our monitors. I mean, I don't have a monitor down there, but I know from being in the booth with Snowcross, you guys are having to watch the monitor. And yes, you can keep one eye on the track, but viewers don't understand that if something's happening out there that's not on the screen, we can talk to the TV truck and be like, hey, pick up the number 14.
Right.
Something's about to happen. But that doesn't mean, A, that we have a good shot of it, and B, it may take a second to get there. But at the end of the day, we are, for the most part, we are following our cameras and our producer's direction. And that doesn't mean they're telling us what to say. So anyone listening, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is what's on the screen is what we as broadcasters have to speak to. That's in fans in the stands may not like that, but we're also producing it for an audience that's much larger with our live streaming, with our TV package. So it's, you know, we're trying to do both. Unfortunately, we are not big enough to where we can have two separate productions like we have at Supercross. We have an entirely different TV truck and team that produces the in-stadium show versus the live broadcast. So we're trying to do both. We're always trying to be better, and we love feedback, but sometimes we don't get it right and we can't please all audiences.
Hey, Shane from the editing desk here. I'm quickly interrupting you to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Amsoil. The Amsoil Shop by Vehicle tool at amsoil.com takes the guesswork out of picking the best oil and filter combination for your vehicle. Choose the right product and packaging option for you and enjoy fast, free delivery right to your door. Visit amsoil.com to learn more. And now, back to the show. So I'm going to change gears a little bit here. We talked about all the prep work that no matter which kind of event you're calling, you put in all this prep work, and then there's that moment where, you know, it's 2 minutes to go live. How do you handle that stress? Do you still get stressed? Are you, you know, have you gone through the paces enough times that it's second nature and you just kind of flip the light switch and go, or is there still stress and anxiety that comes with that?
I don't get stressed or anxious. If anything, it's just trying to remember the points I want to hit in the efficient way. We don't have all day to get our point across. We have X amount of minutes for opening ceremonies before we get to the next race. And in between races, we don't have much time. We got to take a breath. Our TV truck needs to take a breath and go to commercial. So it's a lot to cram in. So it's, if anything, it's just maybe thinking through what I want to say and how I want to say it, because I'm not trying to memorize anything. If you try to memorize it, you're going to sound robotic. So it's really just trying to take a deep breath. And one thing that I had a really good producer a couple of years ago for Race Day Live on Supercross. And one thing he used to do before the start of every single show is about within a minute of going live, he would just say over our headset, our IFB, and say, okay, everyone take a deep breath in, 10, and he'd count us up to 10, and then he'd say exhale, and then he'd count to 10 again. And sometimes we'd take two breaths, and there would just be a long pause. There would be no music or any chatter coming through our headsets. He'd be like, okay, guys, have a great show. And it was really just such a helpful pause to slow down your heart rate, slow your brain down, and clear your mind before we go live, because there's a lot going on. And I would say that the start of any broadcast is always the most stressful time, because that's when a lot of people are glued to it, especially if it's at the top of the season. People are so excited to see what's going on. So a lot of eyes are on you in that moment. So if anything, it's just trying to stay calm. I get really excited too. So that's also causing my heart to race. And it's a bad habit. I know my coach would not be happy to hear this, but I can't break it. I love coffee, and I'm not overdoing it, but I do love like the biggest size coffee I can get, which is usually like what, 16 or 20 ounce coffee. And that is not going to help your heart rate. So that really does not help things, physically speaking, before going live on a show, even though it gets my energy up.
Does singing Creed at the top of your lungs count as relaxing right before you go live? Because that's what Brent and I have actually gotten into.
Oh my God. I feel like you might be suggesting that you're privy to information of last summer. I couldn't stop like singing Creed. And you know how like you to sing Creed, it's the, you're kind of doing it with like
come
the
on,
back
let's
of your throat.
It.
Like, no,
come
I'm
on.
Not going to do it. I'm definitely
when
doing
dreaming.
It.
Yeah.
So let's go there. Oh my God, all the time. Like I couldn't stop doing it. And it was like one of my ADD fixations that I just kept doing. So I'm really sorry to Mackenzie and Ted for having to listen to me.
Nolan has told us more than once, like, do you know how hard it is to get ready for opening ceremonies with you idiots screaming Creed in my ear? I'm like, we get it. Hey, his vibes are great in the booth though.
You know what I love is like when you guys are having a goofy conversation and the truck hears all of it. And then if it's especially, I'd assume it's Troush working. Sometimes I feel like he does it on purpose to be funny. He will like open your channel to me so I can hear you guys being goofs. And sometimes it's just like a much needed distraction from any stress that's going on. But other times it just, at any rate, it just gives me a good laugh.
Yeah, it's always a good time.
It's a good look behind the curtain that when you see us start the show, you know, the intro music ends, know that a minute and 15 seconds before that, we're both belting out Creed. And then we just have to compose ourselves and, oh yeah, we're here to talk about some racing, actually.
Oh, totally.
We'll like fist bump like 15 seconds before, and then with about 6 seconds, my brain goes, oh shoot, here we go.
Yeah, yeah, that, and between that and our producer, Joe Harowitz, who, if you know, Harmonica Joe, he is an amazing person. He's good at his job. He is an absolute riot. And he's just, he's entertaining. And he means business. When the show's on, he means business. But sometimes he lets some goofiness slip through the cracks, and it's great. Exactly. Exactly. These days at the races are very long, it's very hot out most of the time, or it's pouring rain. And man, you have to love it. And you better be having a good time, because it's just the travel schedule alone is too rigorous to not be enjoying yourself. No, I agree.
Yeah, we'd probably get fired.
I love that about you guys, though. Like, those are, you guys have been doing this for, you know, was this your 6th year doing this together, like working on the booth full time, long
yeah,
days.
Yeah, we're married. Sometimes, we're married.
Yeah, basically. Some days, 3-day race weekends. It's just insane. And you guys are, you know, we're on the champ budget. So we all have roommates. And you, the fact that you guys are roommates and you just like stayed so tight through this and you're always laughing and have a good time, like, that's what do the kids say on TikTok? May this love hit me like a freight train. Everyone should want a friendship like you guys have.
And I've announced with like a lot of different people. And at this point, it's like, you know, sometimes you want your alone time. You want to do your own thing after a certain sport that you do, or like a weekend you're out with friends, you get away. But it's like Shane and I, we always seem to, after the work day, we kind of like chill out on our own and like we just unwind together. And it's like we don't get annoyed of each other as much as we work together during the weekend. It's like it's that off time note taking that we don't think we're really doing, but we are, right? Because it's not easy to talk with somebody on air and know when they're going to stop and when you can start, right? Like that clarity you have to find with people is just not easy. And like what we do and what we get to announce with you, we know when that person's going to be done talking. So we just pick it up. And I feel just us in the short times we get to work together in the summer, Shane and I just bounce off that well. So it makes our job that much easier. So I don't think we get that worried about it as much as we did when we first started together, if it makes sense.
Oh, totally. The chemistry side is so important. And you can tell right away when announcing duo or trio does not have chemistry. Like you can maybe get by with it. Like if, let's say the reporter and the announcers in the booth maybe aren't like close friends, okay, but like when you're working,
oh, yeah,
it always helps. And obviously like we have a good thing here, but like when you have two or three commentators in the booth and there's no chemistry, oh, it's awkward for the viewer. It's as awkward for the viewer as it is for the people working in that booth and working around it. So it's the viewers are fortunate that you guys have that. And I think it's important too, like you mentioned, after a long day, you don't want to be spending your social battery more than you have to. That's where like having a good friend in this is so helpful, but like you said, it only helps make the on-camera chemistry better for the viewer.
Right, and we can actually say, you know, it's like we're not just faking it for the world, right? Like, we're really good friends, and I try to tell people, even back at home, telling my good buddies, they're like, man, you guys sound like you really enjoy your time. Is it just all for TV? And I'm like, no, man, like, if you've seen us off camera, you'd probably put us away half the time, but let alone... you would laugh your butt off because like we actually enjoy what we get to do and we're happy to see people. Even though people try to tell us how to do our jobs, like we said, it's still a blast and I don't think I'd want it any other way. And between us three, where we've started and now where we've came, it's the sky's the limit. And I think it's just been so much fun.
I tell people every race weekend that Brent and I have never faked having fun. Like we're authentically having that much fun, you know, whether it's calling a 170s race or the craziest Pro 4 race you've ever seen. We're actually having that much fun the whole time.
Back to back too. No.
And it's so genuine. Like us as commentators, we're talking about what's happening, but the key part to good storytelling is how do you get the viewer to care? And one of the biggest, most genuine ways to do that is having that genuine enthusiasm. When you are having fun, the viewer's having fun. And you guys have brought that since day one of Champ, and of course prior to Champ, in your successful careers beforehand. So that part, it really makes coming to work each weekend really fun. And I'm not just saying that because you're my friends. It is so true. The energy's good, and I don't have to worry about big egos or tricky personalities, because let's be honest, there are a bunch of those in this industry, in the broadcast industry, like any industry, right? But we don't have to worry about that at Champ. It's a no ego zone.
With all the different roles that you've had and all the different teams that you've worked with, do you find that you've taken little parts of things from other broadcasters that you use? Like, have you ever caught yourself saying something, wow, that sounds just like someone I worked with 6 years ago? That type of thing?
Yeah. And sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's not. But I mean, it's the concept that, you know, your parents might have told you growing up, whether we liked it or not, it's you are who you're with. And when who you're around is going to rub off on you, whether it's their cadence, their vocabulary, their, you know, anything about them, even personality traits. But yes, there was actually, I try not to use any signature sayings. That's a thing to me where it's like, I don't want to rip off any broadcasters, at least without giving it kind of a nod to them. And there is a difference. But I will say, there was a few weeks ago, it was Foxborough, Massachusetts. Jason Wygant and I, he and I were calling the in-stadium show for the races, and his mic died. And this never happens. We have a whole separate production team dedicated to mics and wireless cameras, our transmissions team. So it was a super crazy thing that happened. So his mic goes out, and our producer's like, Haley, I need you to do the pre-race pump. And so anyone that follows Pro Motocross or Supercross, when Jason Wygant's in the booth, he'll go, revs up, gates down. And when they came to me 4 seconds before they needed this pre-race hype to just yell and get the fans excited, that's the only thing that came to mind. And now that I'm saying this, I forgot to tell him this weekend. I need to tell him. And I don't think he cares. He's super cool, and he's one of my good friends in this industry. But I owe it to him to say, hey, man, I didn't try to rip you off like that, but it just happened, you know. And to me, I say that in a very flattering way too. When you have something so good, people want to imitate it. I didn't want to imitate it, but it's all I could do with 4 to 5 seconds notice. also on that note, I find myself maybe I've said it a few times, I'll sprinkle one in there as I'm tossing it back to you, but bonsai move. It's one of my favorites. I'll find myself saying it off the
mic. We spend half our day trying to find our different phrases throughout the day. Joe will be like, hey, you know, guys, you haven't said that very much. And we're like, well, we kind of don't try to think about it. It just either has to just come out natural, or and then we find ourselves just randomly saying it. But if we get in a rhythm, it kind of flows really well, and we laugh at each other when we rhyme sometimes.
The accidental rhymes are the best. Well, the knowing glances between us in the booth when, you know, Brent will say a phrase and then I'll perfectly rhyme, match meter and rhyme like we're, you know, laying down a rap track, then we just give each other this look like, hey, that was pretty awesome.
We're like, no we can do that. No.
It's good.
Hey, so I guess since this is the Champ Off-Road podcast, we should probably talk about some Champ Off-Road specific things, topical things. First, what's got you really excited about coming back to us at Champ Off-Road? What are you looking forward to seeing the most at Antigo?
Oh, man. Well, for me, you caught me in the middle of really diving back in. And to be honest, I'm yet to shift gears back to my pre-race studies. But just off the top of my head, I'm excited to see some of these newcomers. Something Kirchmeyer?
Cross Kirchmeyer.
Cross Kirchmeyer. I'm like, that's a cool name. I like that. And he apparently made some stuff happen. Some notable things on track, it sounds like, the last weekend. So I'm excited.
Two third place finishes back at Wheatland.
That's huge.
In pro stock, I mean, that's serious to show up and make a statement like that.
To me, I'm always excited to meet the newcomers. And oftentimes when I meet them, I find out that, oh, these people didn't just stumble into racing. No, they've been racing a dirt car. They've been asphalt, late model, or whatever discipline of racing they come from. That part is so much fun to me. So I'm excited to meet the newcomers. I'm really excited just to dive back in because I have a lot of questions. Like and forgive me, this is, I'll admit, this is likely out of date. Maybe you guys know, but last fall, I thought I remember Johnny and CJ saying that they weren't going to go to Glen Helen, which is totally understandable, but what does that mean for the Pro 4 Championship? Now, this is only round 3 and 4. We're still early, and it's too early to even, you know, mumble the word championship. But I do think it's interesting, and I do think that, you know, it is a storyline that I think we need to be aware of, or I shouldn't say a storyline, a scenario. So I'm eager to get in there and just confirm some things that I don't know, ask a lot of questions. I love that Gray Ledbetter is back in a truck. That is really exciting to me. She did, you know, it was after she won the Pro Spec Championship, racing side by side and effectively a privateer program when I was speaking with her last year, which was awesome. And I have so much respect for that. But it's cool to see her back in a truck and back with Ryan Beat Motorsports. So there's so much. But I would say that the newcomers and just getting to know them and their stories, that is what I'm most excited for Anago.
How about Mickey Thomas making that jump up to Pro 4? I think he adds a really fun element to that class, an infusion of yet another fast guy who I think could be almost certainly is going to race for wins this year. And then, you know, maybe a surprise out of Wheatland, Cole Mamer, the round one winner, wasn't even going to show up to Anago and now wins a race and decides, hey, maybe I got to find a way to make it to more of these things. So Mamer is another guy that it's going to be more difficult for CJ to just run away with it, whether or not he's going to Glen Helen.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the Cole Mamer story is amazing because he has been someone who has had so much promise, just one of the most promising drivers out there. And this goes back to his pro late days too. And when he's shown up, and I say shown up, meaning like results, wins, it's happened in such a spectacular fashion. We know he's super talented. And he's someone who I'm always hounding to give us a story, give us an interview when he's there at the track because he's a showman for reasons like that. He's so talented. So I'm really happy to see that. Mickey Thomas, what was he, fast qualifier as well?
Yeah.
That's amazing. We love seeing just more talent injected into that class. You know, he's badass in a pro too. I'm just really excited to see what this season has in store for him. So that was one of the coolest bits of news from the off season is seeing what Mickey Thomas's plans were.
No, Pro 4 was just spectacular to start the season, knowing that CJ, though Haley, didn't just run away, like Shane said, and just grab everything. It's cool to see that deep competition. I mean, all the classes actually were very competitive. I thought the numbers were really good for Champ. And the Pro 4 field, everyone waits to the end of the day for that big race. And I think that we're really fueled up for a great season of Pro 4. I know the numbers will be hit and miss here and there, but at our big races, I believe that we'll have a great, healthy field.
Yes, 100%. And I think that right away, I was impressed with the amount of trucks that we did have because it looked like there weren't going to be that many, like of those who had pre-registered, but there were some, I guess I'm going to say surprises only because they weren't registered. So just to have more than we anticipated, especially at the race that's one of the furthest ones away, that's a good sign. And we know we're going to get more inflated entry lists as the season goes on, specifically with the bigger tracks that we go to. And even ERX too, I wouldn't consider it one of the bigger tracks, just length of the course wise. Obviously, it's become a staple to the sport. But I'm just excited. Yeah, if this is how we're starting the season, I like the footing that we're off to, just for Pro 4. But I mean, all the other classes as well. It's shaping up to be great.
Yeah, Pro 2 is just one to watch. I mean, Keegan Kincaid coming back full time here in 2025 to win at his sponsor's hometown track. That was huge. And I think, like I was telling Shane before, that we need Keegan in the class no matter what. It's just that family name and just what he's done for the sport. It's great to see him be really healthy because that class has so many great competitors.
Yeah, that's a class you can't sleep on. You can't, like, you got to be all in each time you show up on the track. And Keegan, when he hasn't been in his full-time seasons, because what has it been, the last season, two seasons? I can't remember where he hasn't been full-time.
2+ years that he's been part-time.
I thought so, yeah. And when he's shown up, he is basically picked up where he left off. And I think that goes to show just the level that he's at. Like, the guy's a, you know, and I say this, like, not on a numbers basis, just who he is. Yes, there's the wins, there's the championships, but why am I, like, stuttering over this? I'm just anticipating people to push back on me for using this word, but legend, I'm going to say it. I'm going to stick to my guns. Legend, Keegan Kincaid. He's just a, you know, of course, the family name, he and his dad, just synonymous with the sport. So that was good. I wasn't expecting him to go back full-time, maybe for that reason, because he stayed so competitive being part-time and he's got a family. And so I wasn't entirely sure if he would go back to being full-time. So I'm very pleased to see that.
Were you surprised that Wyatt Miller was able to double down in pro spec?
No.
That class, by the way, got a whole lot younger over this offseason.
Yes, it did. Yeah, we did. Circle back to last year, we were saying towards the end of the season, I remember from, like, Bark River on, because it would have been, I think, Dirt City, he made his debut, with how well he performed his first weekend out, like, podiums in Dirt City, we started to pose the question in Bark River and Crandon, will Wyatt Miller win in this class? Yes, I think we all agreed he would win in this class. Then it was a question of, how soon will he win? Will he win this season? And I wouldn't have written him off. I mean, the guy's a racer. The guy's a driver. So to go 1-1, though, that's not easy to do. So hats off to him. That was fantastic. So, yeah, I'm really stoked that he's part of this series. I think he brings a lot to it on track and off.
I've told Brent and I've told a lot of people, I think I even said it on this show, that we need to really enjoy having Wyatt racing in Champ Off Road while we have it, because he's going to be racing a cup car on Sundays, like, before we're out of the 2020s, I bet.
Well, we said that at Wheatland, though. We were watching practice, right, Shane? We were up in the booth and we were just hanging out, and we both said it to each other, like, yeah, enjoy it now.
Yeah, the career trajectory that he's on and the people who are supporting him to help get him to that level, and just the diverse racing resume he has at the young age that he is. So he's definitely going places, and I agree, we need to appreciate Wyatt Miller while we have him. And that's something I have been just shouting from the mountaintops for years. Even back just a few short years ago when we only had 4 Pro Fours, just to take it to the 10,000-foot view here, is like, yes, this at the time, like, this sport is not what it was, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. But we need to learn to appreciate what's in front of us, because it's not guaranteed that we're going to have it next year. And that sounds maybe some kind of corny and cliche, but and maybe that's just me being a eternal optimist here, but or trying to put a positive spin on things, but it's really true. There's no guarantee that we're going to have a talent like him, or a generational talent like Johnny and CJ, or anyone else that we have the luxury of witnessing their craft right now. There's never a guarantee. So we just need to sometimes sit back, put our feet up, and just say, damn, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's not easy, and he just to jump in sport to sport. It's like what you're doing in broadcasting, right? You know, it's not easy to do at your level, and you're watching Wyatt Miller just go car to car, dirt modifies, dirt late models, to micros, to outlaws, to anything he gets in, he goes ahead and he wins in it eventually. So it's like, yeah, granted, you could say he has the best equipment, the best people around him, but at the same time, you and I both know, and Shane know, you have to drive the cars, and he knows how to adapt very well.
In the personality that being a top competitor requires, like, right, there are levels of a racer's personality that I will never be able to relate to, and this is far beyond the racing element. Like, the racing that I do, like, I'm doing it for fun. I am purely a sole rider on a motocross bike, but, like, there are things on a competitive level just wired into their DNA and their personality that I sometimes find just difficult to relate to them. And it's just because they're on another level. However, I can try to understand it. And at the very least, I can be like, wow, that's really interesting that he looks at this this way. Or it's really interesting that he chooses to respond to his or her competitors that way. You know, they're wired differently is what I'm getting at. And that's what, you know, that's what makes the greats great.
You kind of touched on this when you were talking about Cole Mamer, but and maybe he is your answer, but do you have like a favorite underdog among the pro ranks that you tend to root for a little bit? I know we're not supposed to root for people, but we all do.
Brent Smith.
Oh man, we love it when that guy's on the podium. Love it. That was really cool though, for real. I'd have to think of one in particular. I think what, and it's funny using the words Adrian Chenny and underdog in the same sentence, because I mean, it's Adrian Chenny. But there have been so many races where, and I'm just talking about recent seasons that I've been covering Adrian. There's so many races that he'd been so close to where I'm like, man, I just want this guy to put it together today. Or Cole Mamer, I've had that experience with watching him as well. It's like, oh man, he's been so close. There have been seasons where I'm trying to think of some other names where if they, I want to say Chris Vandenelson in one of the recent seasons, like if it weren't for bad luck, there would be no luck at all, kind of a thing. It's like, I just want to see someone turn things around. I want to see a come from behind story or just a big turnaround, because to me that makes it compelling. That's the human interest side of it that I'm so excited about, that I want fans to be excited about too. So yeah, it's really season by season, race by race, but yeah, there's been a number over the years, and we know we're not supposed to have favorites, and we don't. We stay as objective as we can, but I think all of us on this team can appreciate a good story when we see it, and that's, you know, it's our job to have an eye for those things.
Adrian's a good pick. When he won for the first time in a long time at Bark River in 2023. If you go back and just watch the end of that race as I was calling him, crossing the line, taking the checkered flag, my voice sounded different than it normally does. And it's because I was super excited, and I'm pretty sure I was already like high-fiving Brent because we were just so excited to see Adrian back on top of the box.
Yes. And that is so, so cool. And to me, like I heard the words from one of our producers, Chris Bond is his name, from our broadcast at Supercross Motocross. And he said the words, meet the moment. When you can meet the moment, that is just top tier broadcasting. You're letting your authentic enthusiasm shine through. And I can recall moments like that from you guys many times where you are so into it. And when you guys are celebrating, having a good time, the viewers at home are, whether they're a fan of that racer or not, I think that people can appreciate when something wild just happened right in front of them.
The other moment like that that immediately comes to mind, and I know Brent will remember it as well as I do, is last year when Hunter Van Zyl snuck past Chris Vandenelson and Wyatt Miller to win in Pro Spec at Bark River. If you turn it up, like go back and watch the highlights. If you turn it up loud enough, you can hear us kick our chairs backwards as we stand up.
Yeah.
Because we both like jump to our feet at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Moments like that. Those are the moments we live for. I love that, like, if you listen closely, the viewers can get in on little bits like that.
Yeah. And it's our job though, right? Like, it's just part of what we get to do, but I think it just makes our jobs that much more entertaining for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And you always look that next weekend when you're going, you think of the long weekend, and yeah, granted, if you're anybody, you think of the downtime and how you don't want to screw up and do all this, but like the big picture, it really feels good though when you can lay it all out.
Oh, and entirely. Yeah, that's when you can just, when you can just be wide open on the gas and let it all hang out there. Those are the most enjoyable moments at the job.
Well, Haley, it was awesome catching back up with you. We've missed you since what, Fall Crandon last season's the last time that we got to broadcast with you. I mean, we're heading to Antigo. We can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I have missed your guys' company, your voices. Wheatland was great, but it's not the same thing as me getting to be there in the dirt with you guys. So it was super nice catching up, and I can't wait to see you again next weekend.
Yeah, sounds great. I'll meet you next Friday. I know your coach won't like this, but I'll meet you at the cheese curd counter under the grandstands.
I think what he doesn't know won't hurt him.
What happens in Antigo stays in Antigo. Sounds good to me.
Love it.
Well, friends, that's it for this episode. We'll have one more for you before we head to Antigo Lions Roaring Raceway. But for Brent Smith, I'm Shane Stetsny. This has been the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.
Sorry, I was checking my text messages.
You're good.
Well, you know, you have Haley Shanley on here and you're checking your text.
Chopped liver, man.
God, son of a. It's enough. That's a check mark. No. Love you, buddy.
Hey, at least I showed up to Wheatland.
Oh, shots fired. Whoa.
Oh, wow.